Welcome to Jam Live, the show featuring concerts and events presented by Junction Arts and Music Society in Haines Junction, Yukon. I am Maria Leniak. Since 2003, the Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival has presented amazing music from the finest artists in bluegrass, such as James King, Michael Cleveland, and Claire Lynch. And this year, for the first time, Jam Live recorded some of the rousing performances for this radio show. As in most musical genres, the bluegrass sound is colored by the musicians' personal and professional lives, and we invite you to come along with us as we explore some of their behind-the-scenes background. Steve Gedrose, past producer of the Bluegrass Festival, was the apt choice to chat with members from each of the five bands that Jam Live is featuring from this year's festival. In this episode, Steve is speaking with Front Country, a six-member band from California. In 2011, these talented and accomplished young musicians from the Bay Area formed Front Country and went on to play what they call progressive bluegrass. The band is fronted by singer Melody Walker with her relentless, soulful voice. During the festival on June 13, 2015, at the crowded St. Elias Convention Center in Haines Junction, we enjoyed conversations with Melody, Adam Roskowitz, and Jacob Groupman.
My name's Steve Gedrose, and we're coming to you from the 2015 Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival here in downtown Haines Junction, Yukon. I'm very pleased to welcome Melody Walker, Adam Roskowitz, and Jacob Groupman from Front Country. Thanks for coming, guys.
Howdy.
Thanks for coming up here
to play for us.
It's our pleasure.
Great. Let's start with a little background about the band. Maybe you can run down the members of the group and the instruments they play.
So I'm Adam Roskowitz, and I play the mandolin in the group.
Sure, great.
I'm Melody Walker. I'm the lead singer and sometimes songwriter and guitar player.
Okay.
And I'm Jacob Groupman, play guitar and sing, and I guess the other three guys are Leif Karlstrom, who plays fiddle, and Jordan Klein, who plays banjo, and Zach Sharp, who plays the bass.
Okay. And I've been asking everybody, I know how important band names are. Can you tell me how that all came about? Is there a story?
So Jordan Klein, the banjo player, and Leif Karlstrom, the fiddle player, had a duo, a banjo-fiddle duo, and then they asked us to be the band, mm-hmm. and then I think they wanted to book some more gigs for their duo, maybe with us playing, and I think Leif came up with the name.
Yeah, I think Leif did too. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's supposed to be like, because we're all from the city,
yes.
you know, and yes. we play bluegrass music, so instead of backcountry...
Okay, cool. I knew there was a story there somewhere. That's neat. Okay, you came together in 2011 in the Bay Area, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. And I know that San Francisco has always been a hotbed of musical creativity. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of cool stuff going on there, you know.
In acoustic music, I kind of thinking about acoustic music, you know.
Yeah, the scene has kind of changed over the years, you know. In the 60s, there's great rock scene, psychedelic music.
And
I think there's been a lot of, you know, indie rock and the noise pop festivals in San Francisco. But there's also the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival.
Okay.
Which is really great. It's a huge free festival in Golden Gate Park.
Wow.
And there's just like hundreds of thousands of people. It's crazy.
Have you guys played that?
We haven't played it with this band yet.
Yeah.
But
that's on the list? Like, that would be a fun thing?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yeah, but it's a really great thing, and that's kind of bolstered the scene in the Bay Area in the last 15 years or so.
Yeah, great. Are there a lot of clubs and scene like that? Or?
Yeah, there's a few. You know, the Bay Area, I think, has always had kind of a small but really strong and tight-knit acoustic community.
Yeah.
Even dating back to the 70s, you know, with David Grisman and Laurie Lewis and Peter Rowan and people like that. These days there's, you know, it's still about the same size, and there's some clubs. The Freight and Salvage is a big acoustic music club.
Okay.
There's a club in the city called Amnesia that's had a bluegrass night every Monday. It's kind of been like the younger hang for people like us. We played there. We used to have a residency there.
Okay.
So, you know, there's spots.
Was it jam or
There was jam one of the nights.
Okay. They have a, it's cool. It's every Monday of the month they have a different regular act. And then I think the first and third Mondays they have a jam, and then the other Mondays they have a DJ. Maybe it's the second and fourth Monday.
Roscoe actually does sound.
Yeah.
Okay.
I started giving the owner guitar lessons like,
okay,
10 years ago or something.
Right.
And then started doing sound there. So it's sort of been a, yeah, you know, like a big part of my San Francisco, you know, acoustic music scene experience, you know, sort of like growing, getting to know people.
Yeah. Great, great. I was reading that you guys won Rocky Grass and in 2012 and Telluride in 2013. What does that kind of stuff mean to you? Is that significant to you guys?
Well, yeah, Rocky Grass was really the way that the band started taking itself a little more seriously. Some of us had never been to Rocky Grass. It's a festival in Colorado.
Yes.
That's really in line of kind of the style of bluegrass that we play. And we went there to compete just for fun. Like I said, I'd never been there, Melody had never been. And so we went to compete and ended up winning the competition, and it kind of gave us a reason to start taking ourselves a little more seriously and go after some different bookings and, you know, build a website and all this.
Yeah.
And then the bigger competitions, Rocky Grass and Telluride are the same people who run
those. Oh, I
see. Oh,
I wasn't aware of that. Okay.
And Telluride's their, I guess, more prestigious competition. So we decided to do that one, and we won that the following year.
Wow. Great. Great. I've seen you guys compared to the Punch Brothers, the infamous String Dusters, the Hillbenders, Frank Sullivan, who we've had up here. That's pretty heady stuff, I think.
We like all those bands.
Great, yeah. Yeah, that's great company to be in. It looks like, from what I could gather, you have two releases so far, an EP called This Is Frank Country and a more recent Sake of the Sound CD. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The EP came out in early 2013, and that was, Rocky Grass was really the reason that we did that. We won Rocky Grass, and all of a sudden we were getting, you know, some requests for to come play different
product
things, and you're like, well, we better record something.
Oh, okay.
And
okay,
then,
so it went that way. It didn't go that you had that to submit to?
No,
okay.
We didn't even have a website when
okay
we did Rocky Grass.
Okay.
The cool thing about the Rocky Grass and Telluride band competitions is that they're actually first come, first serve.
Oh, no kidding.
They don't screen.
No kidding.
They don't screen anyone who gets in there. And so you just call in December on the day that ticket sales open.
Right.
It's actually the same phone number for both Rocky Grass and Telluride ticket sales. And so you actually have to really get on there like on a phone tree with a few different people trying to get through the line.
Because it's busy.
Yeah, and then there's 12
wow
bands can sign up. So the first 12 bands that get through all the people trying to get tickets even on that line, they call in and give a band name.
See.
We're like, I guess we're called Frank Country.
What a bizarre process.
And then they hope that you show up. And then
right
there's always a couple people that don't show up. So like we tell like friends of ours who are like, oh, we missed the deadline. And you can still kind of go and sneak into the competition because a few people won't show up. And there's always last minute bands come in and crash the competition. And some of them even go on to win. It's kind of fun.
Wow. So what's the nature of that? Is there like set tunes, cover tunes you have to do, or you bring your own material, or is there a formula that way?
There's pretty specific rules. You have to, there's two rounds. You get three songs per round. There has to be an instrumental, a slow song, a fast song.
Okay.
And the big thing about this competition is all around one microphone.
Okay.
So you have to know how to do that.
Right.
Which is its own thing.
Right.
And so if you make it, there's 12 bands and they pick three or four to make it onto the second round. And you have to play a whole new set of songs.
Okay. Oh,
three different
wow
songs. But it's only, you know, six songs total.
Right.
So that's like, it was a really cool challenge for us to try to get together this, like, these two three-song sets that were just kind of like, you know, very varied and kind of giving everybody a chance to shine and with some original music and maybe a cover and just, you
yeah
know, trying to make it like a good variety to give us a shot at it.
And kind of representative of what your
yeah
show would be.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's really cool. I didn't realize it was like that. I've never heard of another one like that. Well, maybe somebody can comment on the title, Sake of Sound. That's a pretty evocative title.
That comes from a song that I wrote.
Okay.
It's Sake of the Sound, And I brought this song to the band when we were coming up with potential originals for this album, our first full-length album.
Yeah.
And I had this song, and I was like, I got kind of a verse and a chorus, and I don't really know, guys, it's really poppy. I'm not sure that this really fits in the band.
Yeah.
And I played it for everybody, sent them a little demo, and everyone was like, oh, that's awesome, we love it. And then we got together, and when we arranged it together, it just came together pretty seamlessly.
Okay.
And I think everybody kind of has a love of pop music and rock music in the band, and so
right.
It just kind of felt natural, and it ended up being kind of the title track or the hit single of the record,
right,
if it were a hit.
So typically, do you all bring songs to the group? Is that kind of how it goes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Your own writing, or not necessarily?
Both. You know, often I write a bunch of instrumentals, I brought some of those to the group, Melody writes songs, but we also contribute cover ideas,
okay.
You know, and even the arranging process is very organic, you know, and collaborative. Sort of, that seems to be the way things have gone for the group from the beginning. It's just very
more
natural.
Of a cooperative kind of approach.
Just very natural and organic, you
right.
know, even like... deciding to enter that the Rocky Grass competition was, you know, like, hey, this sounds like fun. Like, some of us have loved that festival. Some of us have always wanted to go there. And
yeah.
So it was just like, you know, let's do this thing.
Yeah.
This is, you know. So
everybody was in.
Yeah.
Great. For fun.
That's
yeah,
great.
For fun.
That's great.
And for glory.
For glory. Oh, yeah. It's all about the glory, of course. I know that your website has links to Bandcamp and Spotify, and I've been asking bands what they feel about audio streaming sites in general. You know, there's a lot of controversy about that. You're not well compensated for that. And how do you guys feel?
I think these days, I think I'm a fan. I use Spotify and I like that stuff. I have no problem with it. I think it's just the way it's going these days. I think if you try to put up barriers to people having access to your music, then that's going to cause problems and not allow everybody to have access.
Right.
It's all about that word, access, and so it's like, rather than buying music today, it's all about renting music. And the idea of purchasing music to own is pretty much gone. Almost.
I'm a former CD shop owner, so I totally get that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love CDs, and I, you know, we've all bought so many of them, but there's no point in fighting it.
Right.
I don't think.
That's the issue, really, isn't it?
I think that Jacob and I have discussed this, like, endlessly. We all have, you know. It's, like, mm-hmm. such a hot topic. But a big part of my feeling towards it is that it's, like, we're still in process. It's still sorting itself out. Like, bands can complain about not making any money off, you know, off Spotify, but a big reason why is because people don't pay for the service anyway.
Yes.
You know, there's a business
yes.
model there, and if people, I pay for the service,
yes.
and it's incredible. I think if more people did, then we would get paid more, but then, you know, when CDs were the way to go, people didn't necessarily, you know, the people who weren't going to buy CDs didn't buy CDs then, you know.
Sharing files or whatever.
Yeah.
And they,
yeah.
they also possibly didn't buy 12 CDs a year, you know, $10 a month, $12.99
right.
a month, I think now is what Spotify costs.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's like,
is it?
It yeah,
is
I think
$10
it's just $12.99 now. sorry, buddy.
I'm still in the free thing with the ads.
But
and all
anyhow,
that.
That's about the price of a CD. And
right.
So, you know, in the old days, did everybody buy at least one CD a month? Like, I don't know if they did. That's actually maybe more revenue.
Some of us bought more.
Some
like
of
me.
Us bought, I think, about 12
but
CDs.
But yes,
as a general
thing. No, that's
so
right.
So possibly it has the potential to actually be more revenue overall if everybody opts in. You know, there are a lot of business models out there where everybody's kind of got to opt in for it to work. You
that's
know?
True.
And so this is just one of those. But I think there are ways that it could be fixed. Some people have really talked about the way that money is distributed could be different.
Okay.
It could be distributed per user. Like if Adam here only listens to one band for 1 month and he's obsessed, then a lot of people are arguing that his subscription fee should go
directly
all to that band.
Oh, I see. Oh,
so it
yeah,
should be
that's
based per user. Their chunk should be distributed among the bands that they listened to.
Right.
Instead of his money largely going to Katy Perry and Lady Gaga.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's a really strong argument, because I know just from sitting in the van listening to stuff on Spotify, I've listened to, you know, sometimes I go on, you know, on adventures and listen to a ton of different stuff, but
sure.
Mostly I've listened to about four, maybe three or four CDs this month.
Okay.
So yeah. Maybe my things should be divided up amongst those artists.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
And we see how, and we, you know, we don't make any money off of Spotify. People,
right.
We see how much people listen to our stuff, and it's tiny.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, like you were saying, we're in this weird gray area right now.
Isn't
between
right?
The end of, you know, the golden age of recording music and the beginning of whatever is coming next.
The and Wild West.
Yeah, I mean, the whole music industry is the Wild West right now. It's always, it's just changing so much, and nobody knows what to do with it.
And you definitely can't go backwards.
Of course.
Right? The cat's
of course.
Out of the bag. So we
right.
Have, like, solutions, not just griping.
Right.
You know, like anything else.
Like anything else. Yeah, that's a good point. Melody, I was really interested to read this comment. One thing is certain, no one will mistake Walker for Alison Krauss. Both are terrific singers, but 180 degrees apart in their approach. How do you feel about a comment like that?
That's pretty cool. Alison is an incredible vocalist. She's so precise, and I kind of wish I had that sometimes.
Okay.
I'm kind of a blunt instrument.
It's okay if you say that about yourself.
But I think, you know, I can sing some rock and roll, and yeah, that's it's just a totally different style, I guess. I just don't have that instrument. I can't do that thing. Like, I can imitate some singers, you know,
okay.
Pretty dead on. Like, Elvis Costello is going to get up. Elvis
yeah.
Costello.
Okay.
The other day.
Oh, yeah? Oh, I'd like to
but,
do that sometime.
I whenever I've tried to imitate Elvis Costello, I just can't. I can't do it, believably.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at it. Because I just don't have that.
What's a different technique?
Of course.
It is. Yeah, I think she uses a lot of head voice. I don't know. I was talking to somebody the other day about what she's doing vocally, and we can't figure it out.
Yeah.
She's kind of an alien.
Yeah.
She's from another planet.
Yeah. I also read a comment that said, maybe our genre is bluegrass or people who don't like bluegrass.
Yeah, that's
Does
a
that
comment.
Sound right?
Well, you know, sure. That's a comment that we get a fair amount from folks who are like, you know, I didn't want to really come to this show, or I don't like blue. I was dragged here, kicking, screaming. Or, but we do get kind of like, I don't like bluegrass, but I really like what you guys are doing.
Yeah,
and I like that a lot.
Of course,
because if we can do our own thing while still, you know, helping people become aware of bluegrass, and if they want to investigate further, they can. If they don't, they don't.
That's funny you say that, because we've had a few bands that have said, "Yeah, we've heard about people have this drug problem." Somebody drug them to our show.
That's a good one.
That's really good.
Yeah, and pretty relevant, really, you know. Let's just go around the table here, and you can tell us who you are inspired by musically, bands or individuals. I know it might be a long list, but maybe touch on some of the highlights.
Well, this is Adam. And as far as mandolin players go, obviously, there's like David Grisman, all those guys, Mike Marshall.
Yes.
They're huge influences. Matt Flinner.
Yes.
Has been a huge influence on me. I've had the great opportunity to get to play with him in a quartet for the last...
Modern Mandolin Quartet, right?
Yeah.
Wow, I was going to ask you about
years.
That.
And that's been an incredible experience. And although, you know, I've never... taken any formal lessons from him, just being around him and seeing how he handles things, like artistic and also, you know, kind of practical and
technical
in music or
okay.
In music land, you
okay.
know, it's been really helpful.
Yeah.
So that's
Your guy.
Yeah, pretty much. Don't tell him that.
Okay, no, I would never mention it. Okay. How about you, Melody?
Well, I've always loved, like, you know, ballsy lady singers.
Okay.
So, like, Janis Joplin.
Okay.
And, Grace Potter these days is doing some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
She can sing her butt off. So I like women that bring the power vocally. And, as far as my role models for singing in a bluegrass band, I grew up listening to Lori Lewis and Kathy Kalick.
Of course.
In the Bay Area and going to the Strawberry Music Festival and... just seeing them play all the time. My parents were huge fans. And so you know, that was my up close and personal ideal for what like bluegrass singing was, you know.
Right.
Just like watch them and see what they're doing. And so I feel like I've probably stolen a lot from them
yes.
over the years.
Okay.
And I know them both now, which is really cool.
Of course.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
That's even better because then you can ask them, how do you do that thing? Or what about this song? And it's cool that we can have kind of like oral tradition stuff. And I know Adam's gotten to hang out with Mike Marshall. And that's
yes.
really cool too. And you
yes.
can just like ask those questions you wanted to ask. And we've gotten to hang out with Peter Rowan a fair amount.
Yeah.
I love his vocal style too. I think he's just such an incredible vocalist.
Definitely.
And his yodeling. And he just goes on vocal space jams and stuff. And it's been great to kind of see that up close and get to sing with him a few times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jacob, how about you?
Well, let's see. I mean, you know, for bluegrass guitar, there's always the obvious ones. I mean, I've listened to a ton of Tony Rice. And
he's come up quite a few times in our conversations
of
today.
Of course. But I also love Norman Blake.
Yes.
In acoustic music, I took big influence from Mike Seeger and New Lost City Ramblers.
Oh, no kidding.
Early on when I was first getting onto this stuff.
Okay.
I love that stuff. But I come from, you know, rock and roll and big Grateful Dead fan,
okay.
Jerry Garcia, and studied jazz in college and love like Jim Hall and Wes Montgomery.
Nice.
So folks like that, Stevie Ray Vaughan back in the day, I try to draw from various influences.
Yeah.
But definitely Norman and Tony Rice for the bluegrass side thing.
Cool. So I meant to ask this before, are you guys from musical families? Is that how this whole thing came?
Both my parents played music. My dad had a kind of short-lived spell of being a professional musician, but they, you know, but it was a very musical environment and lots of instruments around and lots of listening to music.
Right.
Like, collectively, not in a structured way, but having music always be on the radio or whatever, which I think is something that might be lacking in, you know, in
society. Isn't that right?
You know, I'll teach kids and I'll, you know, be like, what do you guys listen to at home? Maybe we can, you know, do some of that. And they'll say that they don't listen to music at home or, you know, whatever. So I think
everyone's on their earbuds.
I feel like it was a big like a big advantage to be able to listen to have music happening in the home.
Okay, so particular genre of music on in the house or just all kinds of stuff?
All genres.
Okay.
Classical music, jazz, country music. We listen to a lot of Doc Watson.
Yeah.
And Mississippi John Hurt. And, you know, a lot of rock music, the whole thing.
Yeah, great. How about you, Melody?
I grew up with a pretty eclectic palette. My parents are just huge music fans.
Players? Or?
My dad's a songwriter
okay.
and plays a lot of different instruments.
Okay.
Piano and mandolin and guitar. And they raised me around, you know, a lot of Beatles. Every Beatles album, a lot of Stones. My mom was like the Stones fan and my dad was like the Beatles fan.
Isn't that how it goes? Yeah.
So I really had the best of both worlds.
That's fun, yeah.
I definitely side with the Beatles, just for the record.
Yes, me too.
Just me, I don't want to alienate anyone out there, but
no, I hear you, yeah.
So, yeah, I grew up definitely around music and going to some music festivals and that being an okay choice, you know, which is, I think that's the most important thing.
Isn't it?
So it's like, it's okay. Like, they didn't have a heart attack when I went to school for something else and then ended up being a music major. And
is that how it went for you?
Yeah, and they were okay with it. They were still a little, you know, hesitant about it. Because my dad was never a professional musician. He's just a working dude. But he's always played music in the community and at festivals my whole life. So now they're pretty stoked. And I got to take him to the Telluride Music Festival.
How fun.
Last year. And that was pretty cool to get to share that with them. And yeah, they're pretty stoked to come out and party with us.
Definitely. Of course. Yeah.
They do get down.
Yeah. How about you, Jacob?
No, my parents didn't play music, but they certainly listened to a lot of music, and my dad especially turned me on to tons of stuff. He would kind of, when I was younger, he would kind of force me to listen to things like the blues, you know, early blues and like Paul Simon, Talking Heads, and then when I got older and started getting interested in stuff, he was always able to to point me in the right direction. My mom would listen to, you know, country music growing up in Virginia. But never really bluegrass. That never really entered the spectrum until I discovered it in high school.
Okay.
But yeah, there's always music around and always supportive of learning music and going to concerts and stuff.
Was there a particular group that kind of turned you on to that? I mean, I know from my generation, it was Will the Circle Be Unbroken, just kind of lit all kinds of fires.
For me, it was through the Grateful Dead and Oldham in the Way. Gazillions of other people. How it happened.
Well, that kind of feeds in. Some of you guys have talked about that already. Does your family encourage you to follow this goofy track of being a professional musician?
My folks were 100% on board.
Great.
And really supportive.
Great.
And I was telling someone like a couple days ago, I forgot, I think we were talking about playing sports or something, and, you know, they were trying to get their son into playing music, and all they wanted to do was play sports. And I remember, like, I really wanted to play sports at one point, and my parents were like, oh, that's kind of weird. They like indulged my desire to play sports, but, you know, I'm very supportive of playing music.
Great. And Melody, I guess you already covered that they have and remain very supportive.
They're very supportive, and I feel really lucky about that. I think it's a big deal for people if, you know, their parents put that to them as a worldview.
Yes.
That you can pursue anything creative as, like, a job or just, you know, an artist's lifestyle.
Yes.
So I feel really privileged to have that. And not everybody does. And sometimes people really trip about that. They get caught up in their heads and they're like, I can't do this, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, I gotta have my safety net and my job, and like they just, that's what they know, you know, and so they go with that, and I feel lucky.
Yeah. Jacob?
Yeah, lots of support. I think, you know, when I announced that I wanted to go to music school, and they were a little concerned, but music schools took me a lot more seriously than normal schools. I think that helped.
I get that.
And, you know, I think there's certain parts about the lifestyle that I lead in terms of traveling all the time and just, you know, I mean, we're not getting rich off of this. That, you know, I think they would like to see a little more security, but they've always been super supportive and, you know, yeah, on board from day one.
That's great. That's great. That kind of leads me to why do you think that bluegrass remains relevant in our modern high-tech world?
That's a good question.
I think people are looking for authenticity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's pretty obvious to most human beings when you're, like, sitting around a dinner table at a restaurant and everybody's got their phone out, you know? It's pretty obvious to most people. They're like, wow, this is kind of messed up. Most people have that realization, I think, you know?
I want to think so.
Yeah. I think it can be really transcendent and freeing when it's just a bunch of people listening to music played on acoustic instruments in just this really organic way. So I think that maybe that's it.
I also think there's a sort of a thread that runs through traditional music, like from all, you know, different cultures, like Irish music, and et cetera, and that resonates with people.
Okay.
You know, and I don't know what it is, and we could be really nerdy and try and dissect exactly what that is, you know. But whatever it is, it's something that hits a nerve with people and they, you know, respond to it. I think that's having that be a part of your background musically, you know, is important or affects people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
at least what got me, what I really like about it is the community and the just the kind of the overall positive vibe that comes from bluegrass, and everybody's, you know, it's not very big, everybody knows each other, and it's easy to just get together and play. There's no barriers,
right?
You know, it's a great tradition that's accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
If they want to
play or to listen to, eh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you guys seem to play a lot of dates in Colorado. What is the deal with Colorado and acoustic music?
I don't know.
Yeah, what is that? They have a lot of festivals.
They seem to have a lot of bluegrass and a lot of bands coming from there, a lot of festivals. Yeah, that's why I ask.
I think it was, coming out of, in the 70s and 80s, it became kind of the alternative or just a place for, like, the new place for young musicians to get into bluegrass. Because mm-hmm. it's always been in the South.
Sure, of course.
And in the Northeast, too.
Sure.
And, in the Midwest since it began in the 40s, but... Colorado seemed to become, it was like the new hotbed for whatever the next new grass, or it kind of became this new place for this new version of bluegrass. And I think that combined with its mountains and its high altitude.
I think it has a lot to do with the festivals, honestly.
Okay.
Telluride and Rocky Grass have been happening for over 40 years now, and that's a big deal, That's a lot of years for a festival to be entrenched in the community and getting people excited every single year about the bands that are new in the genre.
Yeah.
And, they're just up on it.
Yeah.
They know what's new, what's old, and they're in the campgrounds jamming these tunes and speaking the tradition and getting it moving, And so there's just a lot of festivals in Colorado, and every single town that a festival's in, there's somewhat of a year-round presence.
Right.
Whether that's
right.
People who fall in love with it and move there, musicians,
okay.
That's how it is in Lyons, Colorado, where
Rocky Grass is, yeah.
And so there's people there to teach lessons year-round.
Okay.
And there's all these kids on the Front Range of Colorado that are just killer pickers.
Is that right?
Who just go to these camps, and there's often a little, kids bluegrass camp before an adult bluegrass camp, and they can just learn from really great teachers, and people are making it happen, It's, I don't think it's completely organic. I think it's some visionary people in communities that are making it happen, and making it happen year-round and yearly.
And Bill Monroe himself, in the 70s, kind of gave it his blessing. He liked the Newgrass Revival, and he literally helped start and fund the festival that became Rocky Grass.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
The Rocky Mountain Bluegrass Festival.
Okay.
Contacted him and asked him, and he was like, "How can I help?"
Right.
And so, that early, even then, there's always been he was like, "This is okay," and everybody
gave it his blessing.
Yeah.
Well, I find it pretty cool that that's how David Grisman and Jerry Garcia met, was playing with Bill Monroe. Right.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty significant to me.
We're playing, they met at a festival, seeing Bill Monroe.
Okay, was it? Okay, I thought they were actually playing in his band.
No, I don't think they ever... Jerry wanted to play in the Bluegrass Boys, but neither of them ever actually played in the Bluegrass... David Grisman plays mandolin.
Yeah.
There's only one mandolin playing in the Bluegrass
Right,
Boys.
Right.
But I know that they met at a festival in the mid-60s, or in Virginia.
Was kind of the common...
Yeah,
that Bill Monroe's music, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty significant to me. I see you guys play a lot with the Steep Canyon Rangers, and we had them up a couple of times. Well, before they played with Steve Martin, let's put it that
right,
way.
Of course.
And that's pretty big company. They're a heck of a band.
They're heck of guys, too.
Really, yeah.
Heck of a
really
guys.
Great guy. Heck of guys.
Heck of guys.
They're really cool. I really like how they, they're a pretty big-time band these days.
I know. That's exactly right.
When we get the opportunity to hang out with them, they're just cool as you could possibly imagine.
Great,
they're really supportive of us and what we're trying to do. And I like those guys a lot.
That's great. So you're doing a little tour with them? Is that how it goes?
No, we're doing a couple shows this summer. We did a show in San Francisco with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've just kind of run into them a few times,
Great. I read a quote from Woody saying that Front Country's willingness to stretch the bluegrass boundary while maintaining the acoustic integrity of the music will solidify them as one of the top new bands of the acoustic bluegrass scene. That's
thanks, Woody.
Yeah, no kidding, man. That's pretty heavy stuff. That's great.
Woody's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we really enjoyed having them here. I also noticed that you guys did a gig where you covered the Brown album, as I used to call it, the band's second album.
Yeah.
Is that a recording project, or was that kind of a one-off? Or
it was our official CD release show of Sake of the Sound in San Francisco.
Okay.
I guess we've been wanting to do that for a while, and it helped with promotion, the idea to put out publicly that we were going to cover a whole record. But
okay.
But the way the show went is that we played our record front to back, first set, and then we came out second set and did the band record.
Oh, I see.
And I think, that record has meant a huge amount to a lot of us in the band. I know me personally, it's one of the big ones, top five records of all time for me.
There's a lot of great songs on that record.
To delve back into it was really fun.
I bet.
I think that's one of the first things Jacob and I talked about. I'm just remembering it now. We had a little band, geek moment.
Yeah.
When one of the first times we hung out, I think.
Yep. And you guys used to be in a little trio with Danny Booth, right? From
yeah.
Frank Sullivan.
Okay. It's true. We played Stage Fright.
We did.
Oh, was that right?
Kind of the very beginning of the concept that became Front Country was this trio that... that Adam and I had with Dan Booth from Frank Sullivan.
Yeah.
Used to live in the Bay Area.
Yeah. And in Alaska.
And in Alaska. Yeah.
It's around.
Yeah.
So we played for a little while. I didn't really play a gig, maybe one or two.
Played two solid
two
gigs.
Two gigs as a trio.
Yeah.
And then
that was a bluegrass group or?
It was kind of like we didn't really know what it was. We just wanted to do something a little different and play rock and roll songs. And
I think what we didn't realize at the time was we were workshopping things for other projects.
Okay.
We were just like...
Yeah, he did something else.
Yeah.
We
were just like sympathetic, minded people musically. And we're like, let's hang out. Because we spent a lot of time rehearsing things and hanging out and talking about stuff.
Yeah,
and it out.
Just being nerds, basically. Yeah.
And it was acoustic. Was that acoustic band?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
You could say
initially the idea was that we were wanting to
we're
going to
blow it up.
We wanted to have drums.
Okay.
But we never really got, we all got involved with different things and he moved away. But it's funny, actually one of the arrangements that we made in that band actually ended up on being this song, the version of Rock, Salt, and Nails that we do in Front Country.
Okay.
Started with the three of us.
Okay. Yeah, so when you're... recording, does everybody bring songs? Have I talked about this already? I'm kind of getting confused because I've done a few of these interviews today. So does everybody bring songs or how does that all go?
We sort of just throw it all in the pot
and
try and figure out, what songs work well together, what songs are, the strongest, what songs work with the band. It's a process.
Long email threads.
We have the longest email threads, over 100.
It's amazing.
My
last band, we had 10 people, so it was a little more insane.
Yeah. But
Front Country's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
lots of discussion.
Yeah. But with the record, I think we started out 20 or maybe more tunes
of
that were possibility. We just kind of whittled them down.
Okay. Just by how you all feel or... kind of the theme of the record,
we'll try a few, and it just kind of depends on what was working.
It became pretty clear when we needed, an up-tempo, a burner bluegrass number for the record, and when we needed something that was, a bluegrass feel and then not a bluegrass feel,
right?
And then a couple slow tunes.
So your stuff is all self-produced, is that right?
For Sake of the Sound, we had a producer by the name of Kai Welch from Nashville, who's a friend of Leaf's and a songwriter, and he's been getting into producing, a fantastic musician, fantastic songwriter, and he was perfect. It was great to have him out. We came to him, and it was pretty late in the process. We pretty much had everything worked out. We knew we were going to record. We needed somebody to kind of head the whole thing up
and keep
us on track, organize it, be a seventh set of ears.
Okay.
So it worked out great.
And you felt that that was the choice to go out of the group to bring somebody new in that you respected to kind of put that together?
Yeah, I mean, we thought about bringing in, I think we contacted Brian Sutton, contacted Tim O'Brien, we threw a bunch of names out there, but
sure.
They weren't available or for whatever reason, but in the end it was good. None of us really knew Kyle that well. He was kind of a peer.
Okay.
So it was a really nice collaborative thing. And he did it. I don't think he couldn't have been any more of a perfect fit for what we were trying to do.
Will that relationship continue, do you think?
I don't know.
Who knows? I can't wait to get to work with him again in some capacity.
Okay.
Because he's such a great musician.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons why I think it worked well and was exciting was because he's not a bluegrass musician. He's
right.
So
he brings a different set of ears to the equation. Yeah.
Yeah, and he brought, some different sounds and some different arrangement ideas.
Okay.
And that, I think, ended up being, besides just the organizational aspect of producing, being the... What we got out of it most was the fact that he was not coming from a bluegrass perspective at all.
Right.
Which we really wanted.
That was a good thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I see. That makes sense. Great. Well, let's see. I guess what I would ask is, maybe I got some more here. Tell us about what you're up to this summer.
We're
beyond this festival, of course.
We're busy. We go home.
In two days, and
some of us, we kind of split off after this for a couple weeks.
Okay.
Adam's heading out right from Whitehorse to New York City to play in the Gare Mandolin Orchestra, which is
wow.
a really cool thing that he's about to do.
Wow, great.
Not nerdy at all, but it's really awesome.
It's the nerdiest.
Led by Mike Marshall. It's a recreation of, we should just start.
Let's hear about that. I don't know about that project.
There's this fellow named Abner Yonai, who is, I think his grandfather was a member of a mandolin orchestra before World War II in Poland.
Okay.
And he found this picture of him. They were all killed in the Holocaust. And he went back to the town and did some research and decided that he wanted to recreate this group in the States. And so he called Mike Marshall.
So to recreate their repertoire as well?
Yeah, he did some research to recreate the music that they were playing, to find out what that group was playing.
Right.
And Mike put together this great group of mandolin players. Somehow I snuck in under the wire. they haven't noticed that I'm there yet, but they're
right. They will.
Yeah.
This is mandocello, like the whole family?
Yep. I'm playing mandocello. I'm playing a little guitar.
Okay.
In the group. And it's great, great group of people. Radim Zenkel.
Oh, wow. Playing. He's been up here a couple times.
Yeah, I was talking to him about it, actually, couple months ago.
He's a crazy guy. What a fun guy.
It's a really exciting group to be a part of.
I bet. And this is a recording project you're going to?
No, it's a concert.
Okay.
In New York City for, it's at the Skirball Center Culture Fest something, I think. NYU?
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Exciting. Wow.
Yeah, it is exciting. A recording project would be really fun.
Yeah.
It's hard to, everyone comes from all over the world, there's
of course.
Folks from Czechoslovakia, Mike lives in Germany, there's folks from Israel, Canada, there's this great guy named Eric Stein, who's a mandolin player from Toronto.
Okay.
Who plays and sort of MCs the group, as the musical director of the group.
Okay. Great. Wow, that's exciting. What else is coming up?
We have, in July, we go out for this big tour, our big summer tour, which includes more dates in Colorado.
It's
called Rapid Grass.
Okay.
Some dates with the Steve Canyon Rangers, a couple dates with a band called Hot Buttered Rum and from San Francisco.
Okay.
Festival in Wyoming. And then we drive to New York and do the Grey Fox Festival, which is kind of the big one for the summer, of course, besides Kalani Mountain.
Of course.
But that's
get that one in there.
That's a big one, bluegrass in general, the Grey Fox Festival up in upstate New York.
Okay.
And then we, that's finish out that tour. I think we're going to record an EP of cover songs.
Okay.
Kind of the next recording project.
We're
in the process of figuring out what we're going to do.
Right. Rather than a full length?
Yeah, we're going to... Full length record will be another little year probably before we put it out. But
okay.
Yeah, and then the fall, I think August we're mostly off, and the fall we head back out on the road. We go to the IBMA.
Of course.
And, and Raleigh and do some dates around that.
Okay.
And we're going to go to the UK and Scotland in November.
Wow.
Which we're really excited about.
Great, yeah.
You know, as of this festival, we're international touring artists.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
We'll really be serious.
Yeah.
When we go to Scotland.
Yeah. That's exciting.
And then Europe's the next frontier, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, the thing there is they got a huge audience, right? I mean, there's a lot of groups from here that have toured over there and into China, actually, too, which has been pretty fun. Well, we've talked about a lot of this, your influences and things, but what kind of groups are you listening to at this point? What do you guys listen to currently?
My mind always goes blank whenever...
Yeah, I know. It's a big subject, I know.
We're listening to a lot of potential covers for this
conversation. Sure, of course.
Together, so we've been
which are coming from every genre possible.
Right, and yeah.
Like Michael Jackson? I know you did a Michael Jackson cover.
We love to do stuff from the 80s in particular.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about that. We've been covering Boys of Summer
by
John Henley, which has been really fun.
Okay.
What have I been listening to recently? I listened to Vassen recently.
I don't know that.
Vassen.
A trio from Sweden?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's say yes.
I'm trying to think of records that I've been into this year. A record by the Barr Brothers.
Okay.
Who are kind of like an indie rock band from Canada.
Okay.
From Toronto. I really like.
You know, I've been listening to, actually, this record for the last week by this guy named Chris Cool. Is that right?
Yeah.
Ivan
Rosenberg.
I want to hear that.
And I was driving the other day and I think I listened to it 3 times in a row.
Wow.
Such a great, beautifully produced, well played record.
Yeah. Great.
I was listening to some Ferris and Jason this week.
I don't know that.
Ferris and Jason Romero. They're from Horsefly, BC.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And
I think they were in Apple
really,
last year.
Really great. I actually haven't heard their new record because it's not on Spotify.
right.
I'm sure they're trying to sell it and make money live, but I have been listening to their old stuff, and I really can't wait to listen to
it.
I want to point out that I did buy Chris Cole and Ivan Rosenberg's record from iTunes because it wasn't on Spotify.
Can you burn it for me?
There we go. There's my CD shop going up in smoke again.
Oh, man.
Oh, sorry, dude.
No, that's just how it is these days. That's all right. Okay, well, I guess we'll close by, I'll ask, what can our audience expect to hear from Front Country this weekend?
Front Country music,
yeah.
You know, we try to do... great original songs, great original instrumentals, and really well picked covers. Good songs is
the key.
Motto.
Okay.
Yeah. And energy.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite things. You know, I was just talking to someone today, and they hadn't seen the band. And they're like, "Oh, do you guys sit down?" And I was like, "We definitely do not sit down."
Right.
No, it's a high energy. We bring a lot of rock aesthetic
right.
to the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
We really give it all we've got, you know.
It's, yeah.
We don't have much to give, but we give it all.
We hope the pyrotechnic.
Yeah. We've got lasers.
Laser light show.
Smoke.
Explosions.
Yeah. Okay.
People may not like the show, but we hope that
they'll be distracted by the light show.
We hope that they'll just kind of say, "Oh, look at those guys go!"
Given their all,
they play
just
that.
Just trying their hardest.
We all, you know, we try to put on a really fun show.
Yeah.
High energy.
Yeah.
You know, we always have a great time playing together. And I think that really translates to the audience.
Yes, of course it does. Well, thanks very much for having this chat with me, you guys. I really appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to a conversation between Steve Gedrose and 3 of the 6 members of Front Country from California. We recorded this event at the 2015 Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival in Haines Junction, Yukon. If you wish a replay of this interview as well as other interviews from this year's festival, check out our website, junctionjam.ca. Just click the Jam Live link. A heap of thanks to the Yukon Bluegrass Music Society for all their support. And we extend hearty appreciation to Steve Gedrose for preparing and conducting the interview. This show is brought to you by Junction Arts and Music, written and produced by Dieter Gade, and I am Maria Leniak. Bye-bye. See you next time.